This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome to the New Books Network. Artificial intelligence, sometimes called artificial general intelligence or AI, seems to be in the news everywhere. It's awash with both triumphant claims of new capabilities and fears of novel threats to our well-being. Indeed, the current issue of the New Yorker magazine asks whether AI will, quote, extinguish the human race, end quote. These apocalyptic worries have, of course, led to calls for government regulation, but many people doubt that our elected representatives know enough about AI to regulate it effectively. The Europeans, however, have begun to articulate a policy, but what is to be done? My name is John Torpy, and I'm director of the Ralph Bunche Institute for International Studies at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. Welcome to International Horizons, a podcast of the Ralph Bunche Institute that brings scholarly and diplomatic expertise to bear on our understanding of a wide range of international issues. We're fortunate to have with us today Gabriele Mazzini, an officer of the European Commission since August 2017, who has focused on legal and policy questions raised by new technologies. In that role, he contributed to shaping and implementing the policy and regulatory initiatives of the European Commission on Artificial Intelligence since its inception, with the adoption of the Communication on Artificial Intelligence for Europe in April 2018. He co-authored the White Paper on Artificial Intelligence in February 2020 and designed and co-drafted the proposal for the Artificial Intelligence Act in April of 2021. He holds an LLM from Harvard Law School, a PhD in Italian and Comparative Criminal Law from the University of Pavia, and a law degree from the Catholic University in Milan. And he's qualified to practice law in both Italy and New York. So thanks for joining us today, Gabriele Mazzini.
Good morning, and thank you so much, John, for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. Thanks for doing this. So maybe you could just begin by telling us what we should all understand under the term artificial intelligence. I mean, everybody's heard it by now, but who knows, you know, how many people really get what it's all about. Could you clarify that a bit for us?
Yeah, that's certainly one of the most challenging questions that I think we had to deal with when we started thinking at the European Commission about regulating AI. As you may know, any piece of legislation fundamentally has to define its scope of application. So that's a really key choice to be made. So definitions are essential. And of course, when we venture into this process, we realized how difficult it was to define artificial intelligence. Of course, there's tons of definitions, and you know, many people have different views and different perspectives. Actually, even within the scientific community, there is not really a consensus of what is AI, what is not AI. And as you know, also the concept actually has been around for so long. I mean, the term was used for the first time in the 50s. And of course, since the 50s, the technology has evolved tremendously, so much, that of course, the same concept was the concept that were referred to with this term in back in time could not be the same as today. So this was the background of where we stood when we had to think about, okay, definition number one, artificial intelligence, how do we define it? And certainly there we made a clear choice that, of course, any definition that is in the legal framework is a legal definition for the purposes of the AI Act, is not meant to be, of course, a definition that would hold true for the scientific community or for other communities, or like even the general public. It's a definition for the purposes of regulating certain uses of this technology in the AI Act. At the same time, of course, although this was therefore a fairly limited objective, if you want, given the impact of legislation, we also wanted to make sure, and notably the impact of the AI Act outside the EU, we wanted to make sure that we would take as much as possible a concept and a definition of AI that would be aligned with, or that would gather some sort of international consensus. So that is why we started by looking at the work of the OECD. So the OECD in 2019 had developed some principles for artificial intelligence, and they had the definition there. And therefore, that definition, although was meant primarily for a policy document, which is not binding, but received already consensus beyond the EU. So that's where we started. But we made some tweaks to that definition. Notably, for instance, we added the reference to content as a specific output of the AI system. The initial definition of the OECD referred to the contents of an AI system, output of an AI system should be recommendations, decisions, or predictions. So we felt, for instance, that, hey, we need to make sure that we include generative AI. So, for instance, things like ChatGPT that just produce text should also be considered AI. We also realized that that definition was lacking the legal certainty needed for a legal text. So we added, for instance, an annex referring to certain type of techniques that need to be used for a certain type of system or a software to be considered AI. Notably, we refer to machine learning, we refer to logic and knowledge-based approaches, and to statistical approaches. So I have to say, cutting a bit the story short, that the objective that we had was to classify as AI systems that were not developed according to traditional programming techniques. This was very clear for us. We didn't want to regulate through the AI Act any sort of automated system, but only those systems that would preserve a certain degree of complexity. And because of that complexity, because perhaps of that opacity, because of that inability to actually understand whether, you know, the traceability of that system, we needed therefore more rules. So while the regulation of AI focusing on certainly certain types of automated systems, it does not intend to cover all of them. And ultimately, the definition that we're going to end up in the final text remains very much aligned with the definition in the OECD, which has actually just been reviewed just a few weeks ago to align with the text in the AI Act.
I see. So, I mean, there are these, as I said in my little introduction, I mean, there is this kind of apocalyptic reaction to a lot of this technology. And, you know, I mean, what you just referred to is sort of statistical outputs and text. I mean, it all sounds pretty mundane. So, you know, is AI going to, what did I say, extinguish human life on Earth or whatever the New Yorker is asking? I mean, I can't think of a technology in the recent past that was seen as so dangerous. I mean, other than like nuclear weapons. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, what, I mean, you've just described kind of sort of what has to be regulated, but what are the fears about this technology that are leading people to be so concerned?
So I have to say, in this respect, I'm fairly skeptical. Actually, I would say I'm very skeptical about these claims around the risk for extinction. And this is something we have never really considered as we went through the process of the Act. So the Act was born out of the need to address very concrete risks for individuals around safety, around health, around fundamental rights. So just to be very, very concrete, we want to make sure that if we deploy an AI system in a car or in a drone or in a medical device system, we want to make sure that that system performs consistently, properly, safely for the patient, for the driver, and so on. So here we're really talking about the legally protected interest is about making sure that this, the system is safe, people don't get into accidents, their health is protected. Same when it comes to fundamental rights. So we want to make sure that as banks, for instance, deploy systems for assessing the creditworthiness of individuals, or city deploy algorithms to determine which school kids should be sent to, AI system that may be used in the workplace to select resumes or applications of candidate. We want to make sure that those systems, again, consist conformally, do not discriminate people based on protected grounds, because ultimately these systems are assisting human decision-making. In some cases, you actually may be performing certain functions completely autonomously, but we know that they are maybe not working very well, and hence that is where we wanted to come in and ensure that these systems are properly trained, properly documented, and traceable, transparent. So in that sense, we never considered the risk of this system getting out of control or leading to some sort of existential threat. And it is true that certainly this matter has at some moment entered into the debate around the AI Act. I would say mostly in relation to this latest developments around foundation models and what actually we call in the AI Act general purpose AI models. So these models that have increasingly become known after the development of ChatGPT, big models that really almost seems to show a level of intelligence that has not been seen before, like coherent expressions, can express themselves in a human-like fashion, have a conversations with people. So this certainly attracts a lot of our fears about these systems being able to do probably more than they can. But in fact, we still believe that these are tools that by themselves do not lead to these sort of existential risks. There may be some controls are needed, as the systems become more powerful. But certainly, I find actually that, pushing the discussions, especially in the general public, about this technology possibly leading to existential risks, prevents us from having a more grounded conversation around the actual risk and actually the potential benefits. And I think we need more AI to solve some of the challenges that we have, rather than too much fear around it.
So, I mean, I don't want to spend all our time talking about this, but I'm sort of curious, why you think these apocalyptic fears have emerged. I mean, what is it about the technology that makes people think that these machines can be smarter than we are?
I think that there may be, to be frank, maybe two camps on this topic. So certainly there are some scientists. So you may be aware there was a letter signed by scientists, very reputable scientists, who expressed concerns about this technology becoming very powerful, and they call for a halt on the development of those technology. So, and I think these claims need to be taken seriously, although certainly other scientists disagreed as well. So again, we didn't have a clear
consensus, or
exactly consensus on what should be done. But I think certainly those deserved some attention. On the other side, I think there was also some positioning by industry leaders around those same topics, saying that, for instance, indeed, this technology can be very dangerous, and therefore we need very tight controls. And this is where I'm personally a bit more skeptical, in the sense that it's a bit like saying, trust me that I will be able to control this technology, and we should not actually disseminate this technology too much because this may lead to risks that we cannot control. So I'm sometimes, when I hear some of these claims, I'm a bit afraid around certain companies wanted to use these fears to create some sort of a regulatory moat around the technology. So we need more rules, or even, ex-ante certification system, like, for instance, licensing of these models before they're releasing on the market, to essentially create more difficulty for other players to come in. So this is a bit my feeling. I feel we had a bit of both. And ultimately also the claims whether this technology is really such to really represent an existential threat, I think they're not really clear to everybody. So I mean, it's something that certainly we should further explore, but this should not prevent us from taking action now about the risks that we see, and also, keep monitoring what's happening, but not taking excessive action or preventing us from developing a technology that we think can also be beneficial.
Right. So, I mean, in response to some of these fears, and in response to the general concerns that you outlined at the beginning, the EU just this past week has adopted, I guess, this AI Act, which, if I understand correctly, you had a role in drafting earlier on, right, in its life. So you may know more about it than just about anybody. So maybe you could tell us, what has the EU done? What's in this AI Act? And what does it sort of tell us about what we should be doing in the future?
Yeah, so the Act is a fairly complex piece of legislation, really, really quite complex, in the sense that it's a horizontal piece of legislation, meaning that it doesn't only concern one sector, it concerns basically all sectors of society and economy. So from law enforcement to financial services to employment to education to products, so really broad. And in that sense, other than creating substantive rules on what certain things, what companies should be doing, it also creates a governance system. So how those rules should be enforced, who should be responsible, taking into account, of course, the fact that in the EU, we are a supranational regional organizations that relies also on the legal orders of the member states for enforcement. I would say one of the main idea behind the Act is the risk-based approach. The risk-based approach means that the law doesn't want to regulate the technology as such, so AI as a technology, but wants to regulate the specific uses of the technology. And depending on whether, on how the technology is deployed and used, the regulatory response should be adapted to the type of risk that technology poses. That's why we have developed a sort of three layers of risk and three set of rules. The first type of risk is when the use of technology generates a risk that can be considered unacceptable in the context of the EU, of course, considering our value sets, you know, our principles. And examples of that would be a social scoring system. So a system that will be used to create social scores for individuals should be banned. We don't think that that kind of systems would have any benefit for our society. So essentially, when the risks created by certain systems are considered unacceptable, they should be prohibited. One notable example also is the use of biometric systems for identification of persons in publicly accessible spaces by law enforcement authorities in real time. That's a specific use case that is prohibited, but with some exceptions. So there are cases when, for instance, the use of real-time facial recognition would be allowed by law enforcement authorities in the EU in public accessible spaces, for instance, in the case of a terrorist attack or something like that, things like that. But it cannot be used without those kind of restrictions. There are then situations where where the risks are considered high. So that's why we talk about high risk AI systems. In those cases, the use of the system while creating risks also leads to some benefits in terms of efficiency, in terms of enabling supporting human being in performing certain functions. In those situations, the systems would be considered allowed, so it's possible to use them, but they are subject to certain requirements. Those requirements relate, for instance, to the data sets. We need to have good quality data sets that relate to the transparency of the system, the human oversight, the cybersecurity, the robustness. And these are generally requirements that are fairly, on which there's quite a large consensus in the community for AI to be trustworthy. So basically what we're asking for is that when a system is classified high risk, an example would be a system that is part of a medical device or a system that is part of used by a bank to give loans or, you know, by schools to assign kids to educational institutions. Those systems must comply with those requirements, and at the same time, they must be certified. So before they are placed on the market. So there is an ex ante, we call it ex ante system of certification, which guarantees that once the system is deployed and used, that system is safe. And then we have a third category of risk that are related to the transparency, or I would say lack of transparency of certain systems. Here, the obligations are much lighter. Essentially, it's a disclosure obligation. Users or deployers have to inform, for instance, that I'm interacting with a chatbot and not with another human being. It's a matter about human dignity. I need to know if I'm, you know, interacting with a human or a chatbot. It's quite simple, but, you know, we need to put in place disclosures obligations. Another example would be about generated content. As we, you know, in the last few months and years, with the advent of generative AI and this ability of AI to really reproduce content that really resembles real content, it's important to distinguish what is real and what is not real. So we want to make sure that that content is specifically labeled, and even maybe having, in certain cases, tools to develop to detect whether the content is actually artificially generated or not. So essentially going beyond a labeling exercise, but also establishing, although the technology there is not 100% reliable, but we want to encourage also tools to ensure that there is a possibility to verify through technical means whether, for instance, certain type of image is being artificially generated or not.
So you used the term early on in that answer. I think you used the term that this was a horizontal piece of legislation. And that it basically affects AI kind of across the board of the economy or of people's lives or however you would say it exactly. And it reminds me of, an economic historian named Robert Gordon was writing about, you know, growth in modern society in the United States in particular, and, made the point that growth has, relatively speaking, slowed since the creation of what I think he called these general purpose technologies like electricity and fossil fuels, which really, you know, are what powered, in a way, you know, the Industrial Revolution. So I'm sort of curious, I mean, do you see AI as having that kind of all pervasive kind of significance for our lives? And, you know, in that sense, maybe itself a kind of general purpose technology that's going to, you know, transform the world we live in?
Absolutely. I think AI is a general purpose technology, with no doubt about that. And this is why we wanted to take, among other reasons. I mean, there are a number of technical reasons, but also I would say from this angle, we wanted to take a horizontal approach because we want to make sure that as much as possible, this technology is regulated equally across sectors because of the fact that it can impact so many sectors. So we want to make sure, why should we regulate, for instance, AI in education differently than AI in the workplace if our goal is the same? So ensuring that if, for instance, AI does not discriminate or AI, leads to the same productivity gains. So absolutely, I agree with that statement that AI is a general purpose technology. But also for that reason, I think it was for us quite clear that we don't want to focus on the technology per se, but indeed on the use case and only tackle those cases where AI creates a risk. For instance, if I think about, you know, systems for predictive maintenance or spam filters, this is also AI, but from our perspective, these type of systems didn't require any specific additional rules than what we already have. And actually, probably most of these systems are quite unregulated today. If I think about predictive maintenance, I cannot imagine there are rules applicable to this. So exactly, there are, and actually we believe this is the majority of use cases where AI is in fact not regulated by the AI Act. But indeed, we are talking about uses that we can't even imagine probably today.
Fascinating. So now I'd like to ask you a sort of comparative question. I mean, I know as a European Union official, you're not eager to tell the United States what to do, but I'm curious what you would say about the differences in approach so far. I mean, as, you know, more or less a layperson with regard to all this, I mean, one hears stories about the United States as a kind of Wild West and unregulated and that sort of thing. And I wonder, you know, what you think you're doing and how it differs from what's going on in the States. You don't have to recommend to us what to do, but just explain the differences as you see them.
Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, appreciate that caveat. No, I think you may be aware that the U.S. adopted in October, I think in October, November last year, an executive order on AI, which certainly was a very interesting development happening in the space of AI regulation, not only in the U.S., but I think it really attracted a lot of attention worldwide. And we certainly also at the time we ourselves were in touch with the colleagues in the US to really understand a bit better what we're thinking about, because we are still in the process as well ourselves about finalizing the AI Act. So if I have to contrast the AI Act and the executive order, I would definitely say that, you know, the first and most important difference is that the AI Act is a law passed, we by our legislative authorities in the EU, and is a binding law with not only, as I said before, substantive rules, a whole governance system, you know, and effective sanctioning mechanism to ensure that the rules are complied with. The executive order, in that sense, while of course expressing authority by the president, so in that sense binding, is not a law of Congress. So I'm not an expert in US constitutional law, but certainly the binding force is not the same as that of a law by Congress. And let's say the soul of this order is essentially a policy direction that is given to federal agencies when it comes to dealing with AI in the context of their mandates and remits. So essentially, my understanding is that the executive order is an encouragement to federal agents to explore how they can leverage existing legislation in the US to AI systems. So that applies to AI systems. There are also, of course, other something much more than that. Like, for instance, there is an instruction to NIST to issue guidance, for instance, around testing of AI systems. But there is also an interesting, also additional element, which certainly influenced also our thinking as we were discussing the AI Act around, and this is a part of the executive order which relies on the Defense Production Act to compel essentially companies developing certain type of foundation models, so-called dual-use foundation models. So these are models that can have an impact on national security, national economic security, and public health and safety, to essentially disclose to the government that they are actually performing some training runs on these powerful models, and to disclose the results of the testing done on those models, so red teaming or safety tests. So this is an area where, in fact, the executive order, if you want, goes beyond directing action to the federal agencies, but indeed directs actions also to private actors. And I said this, why I mentioned this, because in fact, as we were discussing the final stages of the negotiations of the AI Act, a new chapter has been added to the initial risk-based approach of the Commission, which I just discussed, which is about establishing rules for general-purpose AI models. And these are exactly the same type of technological developments that in the executive orders are called foundation models. And we set similar type of rules, in part similar, in part a little bit different, in the sense that we create a more articulated set of rules. So instead of just requiring model providers to inform authorities about training runs and disclosing test results, we established two tiers of rules, or two set of rules, one for all foundation models, essentially around transparency, and then a second set of rules for those models that are trained beyond a certain compute capacity to actually engage into more extensive risk assessment and risk management. So I think it's interesting perhaps to contrast also not only the general overall approach, in one case we have a law, in the other case we have an executive action, but also going a bit deeper on those areas where there may be some overlaps, to contrast also the differences between what is the EU approach, which also in the case of foundation models tends to be a more comprehensive type of legislation vis-a-vis the US approach, which is, I would say, more limited in some respects. So, and closing this point, I would say indeed this reflects also a bit the different spirit with which the two jurisdictions and continents look at regulation and notably digital regulation. I think the EU is not shy about coming up with, from the get-go with fairly comprehensive piece of legislation, whereas in the US, this seems to take more time and maybe have a more wait-and-see approach. I think both have advantages and disadvantages in some respects.
Very diplomatic. So let me just wrap up with a final question, which is simply, so what's going to be the next big challenge in this world, in this, area? I mean, what do you think is the next thing that's really going to require a lot of our attention?
So if I have to think from the point of view of the EU, I think we need to focus on implementation. As I just said, the EU in the last 5 years have come up with quite a large number of legislation in the field of digital. Some industry representatives talk about tsunami of laws in the last 5 years. So, because on top of the AI Act, which we just talked about, we have legislation, for instance, on Digital Services Act. We have legislation on Digital Markets Act. We have legislation on data sharing. We have legislation on cybersecurity. Not to mention, of course, what we had before, which is a fairly also comprehensive piece of legislation and very impactful for the digital sphere, which is the General Data Protection Regulation. So think that, for instance, in the US, I would probably say you have none of this. So, and in the EU, we have come up quite a long way in putting together all these pieces. Now it's time for us, in my view, to really look at how all this legislation interact with each other and how indeed they should be properly implemented. Because ultimately, I mean, as a lawyer, I'm very keen on rules, certainly, but I'm also keen on very clear rules. Why? Because the moment rules are many and, they may be overlapping to some respects, it's the risk. What is the fundamental risk is that essentially we create a degree of uncertainty that is not useful, certainly not useful for obtaining the type of protections that we want to achieve. So I think it's important to, so of course it's important to have rules, but in my view, it's also equally important to have rules of quality. So in my view, this is where I think we should focus when it comes to the EU in the next few years. At the same time, I mean, more generally about AI, again, I think we need to probably focus also on a more international alignment. This is a process that is already happening. I mean, the G7 has been working a lot as well on AI through code of conduct. So they're thinking about developing code of conducts, notably on generative AI. And I think as we want to look at the next big challenges, I think it's important that the governments also keep talking to each other and really find common lines on trying to govern this technology, which certainly, going back a bit to one of your initial questions, certainly may pose some concerns, even serious concerns by certain actors, but also is a reality we have to deal with. And I think we don't want just to run away from it or be too scared, but to be realistic. And the best way to be realistic is to engage with those who develop them, to study, to understand what are the best solutions, to look at the evidence, and ideally do this collectively and together in an aligned fashion.
Right. Well, thank you. It sounds like the old adage, the only way around is through. applies here as it does in so many areas. So that's it for today's episode. I want to thank Gabriele Mazzini for his insights about the European regulation of AI. I also want to thank Osvaldo Mena Aguilar for his technical assistance and to acknowledge Duncan McKay for letting us use his song International Horizons as the theme music for the show. This is John Torpy saying thanks for joining us, and we look forward to having you with us for the next episode of International Horizons.